life celebrations and how they don't need to cost the earth in more than one way. So over to you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, thank you. Carrie's introduced me briefly, which is fine. I will just explain to you where I'm coming from. I've actually got a background of wedding party planning and outside catering that I did for about 36 years, both in Surrey and in Hampshire. And then more latterly, I worked as a funeral arranger in a very, very green and beautiful, beautiful shop in Brighton, probably the very first of the natural burial movements. So that's going way, way back. And since I've been ordained as a One Spirit Interfaith Minister, and for those of you that aren't aware of us, we meet people of any faith or none and honour their belief system, and we create, specialise, or my passion is creating beautiful ceremonies to honour all the milestones of life, carry out rites of passage for whatever reason, which can be a very, very powerful and amazing occasion where people get together and witness a pivotal moment in people's lives. And these milestones, the main ones, of course, are baby namings, christenings, weddings and funerals, but there are so many more in between. Endless possibilities, really. You know, when people move into a new house, they might want to have a house blessing, a retirement ceremony. In fact, I can create a ceremony for any, I love having a challenge, I can create a ceremony for virtually anything one likes to put my way, really. And what I'm really focusing on today is the planet and our pockets, carrying out these occasions without it actually costing a fortune, and also being kind to Mother Earth. A lot of people follow a traditional religion, and if they have a new little soul come into their family, they go to church and there's a christening takes place, often wearing a family heirloom christening gown and what have you, but which is wonderful. But lots and lots of people nowadays come from a very heartfelt spiritual place, but they don't actually feel they belong in a traditionally religious setting. And I guess that's where I and my colleagues can really offer something very, very personal, because the fact that we meet people of all faiths or none means that, for instance, if a couple, I'm thinking back a couple of years, I did a baby naming ceremony for a strictly Catholic family. The mother was very torn about, you know, she felt she ought to go the Catholic route, but her husband, an African gentleman, lovely man, obviously wanted his son to honour a lot of African traditions, and it was just a wonderful experience. We created this occasion, bringing in traditions from both religions, both places, and it really, really was beautiful in that I really rather feared that the very strict Catholics would find it really quite unusual and a bit sort of, I was afraid they might be upset by it, but they said it was absolutely lovely. So that gave me great pleasure. And it means that, you know, I carry on now with confidence to do what I do. And one of the very first baby naming ceremonies I did was for Adam, my grandson, who's now 13.
My son.
Yes. Well, how old is that? Is he 12?
He's 12.
12, yes, yes. And we decided, Carrie, Brian and I, we chatted about it. It was before I was ordained. I was still a trainee minister, and we came to the conclusion that if there is a God, he'll certainly be under the willow tree in Carrie Brown's garden. You know, it's everywhere. You don't necessarily have to go to church. And so we set to arrange a teddy bear's picnic, which took place in their lovely garden under the willow tree. People sat on bales of hay. The horse was looking over the fence. The dogs were there. People brought picnic rugs. And we called in the elements, the four elements, into our midst. And we had a very lovely, lovely occasion. And afterwards, everybody sat with picnic boxes and listened to music and played games. And it was a lovely occasion. We have got a couple of pictures here that I can show you. They're quite busy pictures, but this has got the horses and the dogs and the people. And luckily the weather was fine. Had it not been, we'd have had to have collected in the stable yard. But fortunately, it was a lovely day. Oh, sorry, I think I probably skipped to go back a bit. There we are. That's Adam's naming ceremony. And instead of godparents, he actually had guardians, four guardians, a guardian of, what was it, Carrie?
Creativity, wisdom, spirituality. And male, that was his young male cousin. Yeah, male leadership, I think it was.
Therefore, yeah. So we'll just hop back again. And then the next main rite of passage is weddings. Obviously, we get 18th birthdays, 21st popped in, but we can't actually focus on all of them. But a lot of the information I'll give you later applies to any gathering. So if we now look at weddings, this was a very beautiful wedding that took place in Horsham, and it took place in a field behind the family home. There was a circle of people, and Kate had, she wore, her mother died when she was four, very sadly, but she still had her mother's wedding dress, and it was really important to her that she wore that dress. But it was long, it had long sleeves and a high neck. So she had it altered. She had it cut off to the length she was comfortable with. She wore it with Doc Martens and a little leather jacket and the flowers in her hair. And she looked absolutely gorgeous. And it was so lovely. The dress came into the ceremony. And when I told, within the words of the ceremony, I told the story of the dress. And Abby picked the skirt up and kissed it. It was just so beautiful. And they shared some quite intimate information of how they met and how they fell in love, generally within the ceremony. And afterwards, this is going back down into the garden, and it was like a festival feel, their reception. All their friends had bought musical instruments, and there was music going the whole time. Everybody brought their signature dish, so catering was very easy. There was a lovely marquee gazebo set up for the food, and friends rallied around to help with the food, and the friends served the drinks. And then there was some in the garden. There was a platform made from some wooden planks, and the speeches took place there under a lovely old oak tree. And really, that was one of the most beautiful weddings I've ever been to. And cost-wise, it probably cost them the drinks. They didn't do it to be mean or anything, but it was just so beautiful the way everybody rallied around. And people liked to help. They liked to have something to do to contribute. And it went on well into the evening, long past my bedtime. And luckily, it was a lovely day again. But there were gazebos around for shade or had it been bad weather, and they've cleared a garage out. So there was space had they needed to take refuge. So that's Abby and Kate. And then this is Helen and James. This was the very first wedding I did. Having been ordained for 1 hour, this beautiful young lady crept out of a darkened corner and said, will you do James and my wedding next July? It was a year away, but it was just such an amazing invitation. However, they had a marquee in James' parents' garden, and the wedding took place in one end and the reception in the other. And what happens in a situation like this, I actually am not able legally to do the actual signing, the legalities of the occasion. The bride and groom have to go to the register office to sign the appropriate papers and say the appropriate words. My colleagues in Ireland and Scotland can do the whole thing, but hopefully we'll be able to hear soon. But I think the government's a bit busy in other directions at the moment. And that, I remember that wedding just being a beautiful countryside affair. You can see from the photographs, it was sort of Yorkshire moors, and she had just a lovely bunch of flowers, you know, just not formal, or just lovely garden flowers. And one of the things that stands out most in my mind, we were all given PIMS on arrival, and the PIMS, they served in jam jars with a piece of attractive twine tied around the top, and they had recycling bins, one for food waste, or, you know, all the bits from the PIMS went in there, the bits people didn't eat, another one for the jars and so on, and one for rubbish. And they were really, really geared up in an environmental way. So that's Helen and James. And next we have Kat and Simon. This was a wedding that took place in the ruins of Cowdrey Park. Is it Cowdrey Park in Midhurst? I think it is. Anyway, in the sort of ruins.
Petworth House. Anyway.
Yeah, I can't remember now. I actually didn't do this wedding myself, but I went to it to support a colleague. And the bride arrived on horseback. And the table, the altar we set up, was where the altar would have been in this ruined chapel, and it was just lovely. They had little gold chairs, and the whole thing took place. Obviously, they again would have had to have tied the knot formally, either before or afterwards, and it's often just as simple as, you know, popping into the register office on the way to Sainsbury's in your jeans with a couple of witnesses. But that bit has to happen soon, either, you know, sooner or later. And couples that don't necessarily want to tie the knot formally, but want to make a commitment to one another, have a hand fasting ceremony, which again is an old fashioned way of promising loyalty to one another. And originally it used to be for a year and a day. So if you're in a relationship and you think, I'm not sure if I feel brave enough to sign on the dotted line, have a hand fasting. It's just such a lovely idea. After a year, you can promise to be together for a year, 2 years, 5 years, or forever, but you don't have the legal implications. And then we have... This is Sam and Tom. I've known Sam since she was about 3, I think. And she is a marine biologist. And it was very important to them that they got married near water. They really wanted the beach. But for practical purposes, we had to compromise because there were a lot of elderly people concerned, and actually transporting them around would have been quite difficult. So they hired their little old-fashioned village hall, which was lovely. They had a little marquee on the side, and we did a water ceremony in this little wooded garden area where they both mixed a colour and they poured it into the fish bowl. Sam's got yellow, Tom's got blue, and they made their own colour, their own special colour, which was the colour of the ocean. And there were lovely words that went with it, and various people did readings. And again, that was a very, it didn't cost an arm and a leg by any means, because family, friends bought dishes towards the reception. They did have a hog roast. That was probably, and drinks, probably their main expenses. But the village, the little hall, it was decked out beautifully with flags and things. And it, that was a delight. So that's that one. And then this was Sophie and Matt. Carrie came with me to this one. It was in a bluebell glade in Ashurst Forest. Again, quite a Catholic family, but this couple just wanted to do it their way. And it was very beautiful the way they chose the words. And apparently a Catholic symbol is a rose. Whether the family recognised the symbolism of it, but it was rather lovely before the ceremony started. So he gave each member of the family a rose with and with a little note tied to it, saying, you know, thanking them. I don't know what she wrote in the note. It was very personal. But it was a very, very cold day, wasn't it, Carrie? It was freezing cold. And as I said, the words, my jaws were blah, 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 chattering. And it was so, so cold. And because it had been so chilly, the bluebells weren't quite out. But it was a lovely occasion. There were about 18 people standing in a circle, chairs for the elderly people. And it was the way they wanted it. Again, we called in the elements. They had a hand fasting, which was very personal to them. And they jumped over sabers as they went. We made an arch for them to go out of the circle via the arch. We showered them with petals, and they jumped over sabers, which symbolically cuts off their old life, and is a beginning for their new life together. And then we all went to the pub. Oh, and it was so lovely and warm in there. It was just so amazing. And because I didn't have a digital picture of this, I didn't think about scanning it. I wanted just to share with you Carrie and Brian's wedding. Whoops. You can see that. Now, to be different, they chose a rustic barn. And it was, how many years ago was it, Carrie?
Too many to remember. I don't know. I think it was 89 or 88. I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. And before health and safety regulations were strict, I do have to say, because we cleared this, we turned the animals out of the old barn the day before. We scrubbed out the water troughs and lined them with plastic. That's a naughty word here, isn't it? And we chilled all the champagne in the cattle troughs. And it was just a dirt floor. And everybody sat on hay bales. And we had, I've got a picture here. There's a cake. But 4 tiers of baskets, with a little tiny mouse sitting on top that looked like it had just come out of the woodwork. The barn was very, very rustic. The musicians played from the hayloft. They wouldn't be allowed to do that today because it was very rickety, but they were game. And food-wise, because it was September, we had a ploughman's buffet. Lots of lovely breads, cold meats, salad items, sausage meat plats, all the sort of things, lots of lovely cheeses that the women would have taken out into the fields years and years ago to those gathering in the harvest. And Carrie's bouquet, it was full of beautiful treasures from the hedgerows. It had some old-fashioned roses in it, but there were berries and acorns and all sorts of lovely, lovely things, which really followed the theme. And something that when I'm helping someone plan a wedding, I always encourage them to think of a theme, if possible, that they both feel happy with. And it is so easy for any wedding, any party, any celebration to come together if you've got a theme to latch it onto. All the readings, the words, the colours, the food, it all then links up beautifully. So, where have we got to? So, sort of generally, whatever gathering one's arranging, always try and avoid things like helium balloons, plastic ribbons, plastic tableware, polystyrene tableware. I know often perhaps one wouldn't think of using that as a wedding, but at some of the more rustic occasions, it would be very easy just to use those. So we try not to. Use locally grown garden flowers if possible, rather than imported blooms. And food-wise, well, there's so many options. Again, buy local if you possibly can. To save a lot of money, and bearing in mind people love to be able to contribute and do something, have a shared meal and ask everybody to bring their signature dish. People are so happy to do that. If you want to make it very easy, you can order takeaway, an Indian, maybe Chinese. And Carrie and Brian had the ice cream van call, so that was sort of pudding, as it were, and that was lovely. You heard tinkling bell coming up the lane, and everyone went and chose an ice cream. So catering can be very simple, in actual fact, and it really doesn't have to cost a fortune. You know, if you go to a hotel, a big venue, you have a very, very splendid experience. But just bearing in mind, big posh venues, they have manicured lawns, they have dancing fountains, and that is all unnecessary power being used, whereas you could just be in the great outdoors as an alternative, weather permitting, but dress accordingly. Yeah, and if you are thinking about the great outdoors, ask people to dress appropriately, bring, you know, flat shoes, wellies, umbrellas just in case, and that can be all part of the fun. Dressing for a wedding. Now, you know, beautiful gowns costing thousands of pounds are used once. So I'm going to put some ideas forward, like how about going to a charity shop and buying a wedding dress? Hire one. Borrow one, like Kate did, you know, use her mother's, or have it as your borrowed thing. Borrow one from a friend, a relative. Then all you've got to do is find something new and something blue, which is easy enough. And one of the weddings I remember, outstanding wedding I remember catering for, was a couple. They'd both been volunteers with Oxfam for many years. And they had taken part in a fashion show to raise funds for the charity. And they, funny enough, were bride and groom at the very end. And they ended up getting married. And I think their idea was absolutely spectacular. They, on the invitations, they asked everybody to shop in a charity shop and bring the receipts with them to see how much they'd spent as a matter of interest. And it was just extraordinary, the outfits people came in. Absolutely beautiful creations that you'd never ever find in shops. And it was just the most vibrant and wonderful wedding ever. And all the money that they, well, Oxfam did really, really well out of it. And I do think that is just such a lovely idea. Now we come to pages of little bits and pieces. Oh, yes, venues. Just briefly, we've spoken about the possibility of the great outdoors. Nowhere, if you've got a lovely garden, perfect place for wedding parties. Gazebos help with shade or a little shelter if it rains. The marquee in the garden, that's not a very cheap option, but it is a possibility. And there are some lovely old worldy village halls around and community centres, and that can be part of the fun, decorating it with lots of greenery and swathes of fabric, ribbons and flowers. So you don't necessarily always have to think about spending a fortune on a venue. And then I've just got some notes here and I'm just trying to remember what they were all about. Yeah, and I don't know how I'm doing for time, Carrie, but the next obvious rite of passage is funerals, death, end of life. And with the virus being so topical, I think a lot of people have looked at their own morality lately. And so it's a very important subject. Now, do I talk more about this, Carrie, Helen, or am I? I don't know how.
Let's just put everyone on the screen. It doesn't matter, but if you put your cameras on, and you put a thumbs up if you're happy to continue listening to Mum about environmentally friendly funerals and a planning. Thumbs up if you're happy. Is that Melanie? Yeah. I think we've got a majority, so there we go. Maybe another 10 minutes or something. Yes.
Just a suggestion. Do we have a few questions now on what Jean's already said, and then people can ask perhaps a few more questions about the funeral?
Yeah, absolutely fine. Yes.
Good idea.
A little pause now if there are questions about what you've already talked about.
So maybe if you put your hand, if you've got a question, if you just put your hand up and we can invite you to turn on. If there aren't any questions at this moment, then we'll let Jean continue.
Okay, absolutely fine. It is a big soft topic and it's very, very close to my heart because... Okay.
Catherine had a question, I think. Wait a minute, Jean. So there is a question.
Okay.
Catherine, did you want to... Catherine, do you want to answer your question? Do you want to unmute? Yeah.
Hi, I was just fiddling, Helen.
Oh, okay.
I was fiddling around because this Zoom thing is still a mystic art for me.
Oh, you had to raise hand. Okay, no worries.
I do last wishes workshops. And Catherine came to one the other day, well, before lockdown.
it's fantastic, by the way.
Can I ask a question, Jean, about the what did you call it, the hand ceremony, where you maybe
hand fasting, yeah.
Right, could you just say a bit more about what that is? Because it's something...
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the couple, you hold hands, yeah, wrists, and the celebrant, minister or whoever, will tie... that they stole a red cord, anything. Sophie and Matt chose, because she loves Harry Potter, they chose a silver chain to bind their wrists together. And there are certain words you choose, you know, we work out the appropriate words that come from your heart that you say to one another. And yeah, it's like, no, let no man pull asunder. But there isn't a legality attached to it. And you can promise to be loyal to one another for a year and a day, or the choice is yours. It's a very beautiful way of committing to one another within a relationship without it causing all sorts of other complications, which, as we know, it can. Yeah. And it's handfast. Things have been since time began, almost long before, I suppose, marriage in a church, probably. I think years ago they used to use grass. Well, you can use a trail of ivy, anything really. But there are beautiful, beautiful words that go with it, which, you know, we choose together if you choose with the minister or the celebrant, that come from your heart, basically. Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you. That explains.
Quickly jump in and ask Jean, is there a term that's used to describe the state of a relationship after a hand tying?
Sorry, the status of a relationship.
Yes, the relationship. So it's no longer your husband, but is it your boyfriend or girlfriend? Is there a sort of
term?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, well, I think if you've done the legal bit as well, which Matt and Sophie, they actually, in the woodland, they exchanged rings.
Yeah.
That was, to them, that was their real wedding. Mm-hmm. After we'd been to lunch in the pub, they did go to a hotel. They did have a big evening party, but the registrar was there to marry them formally,
yep,
just within a very short ceremony, but this was their real wedding, mm-hmm, as it were, to them.
Yes.
So they are Mr. and Mrs.
Sure.
But no, with hand fasting, you stay, I suppose you can be whatever you like to one,
yes,
another.
Yeah, I just wondered whether there was a term that...
Not to the best of my knowledge.
Okay, thank you.
But, you know, you can be partner, you can be... You can make your own decisions on it, really. Mm. Because there's no, you know, legal paperwork that goes with it.
Do you want to continue with the final life celebration?
Yes, fine. Lots of people, and this is what I really focus big time on at the moment, just opening a new website, which... it's very exciting. People keep saying, "Oh, how did you get into that sort of work?" But it started when I went to two amazing funerals way, way back, probably in the early 90s, and they were just so amazing. And both funerals were organised by elderly gentlemen. They pre-planned them themselves, and we, not just me, but we all came out and we just felt so elated, so uplifted. We just wanted to sing and dance and rejoice and celebrate. And I thought, now that is how a funeral should be. That is, if one possibly can achieve that. And that's been my life's ambition, really, to be able to show people the healing power of a good funeral. And that led me to write a book, Times Ago. And shortly after that, I moved to Horsham. Then I worked at Brighton at Arca for 10 years as a funeral arranger. And I suddenly realised very early on that I could use my party and wedding planning experience to create beautiful funerals. So they are massively... well, if people want them to be, that is, you know, they can be very beautiful celebrations of life. There's, if I have anything to do with it, you know, they're no longer dowdy, morose, black occasions. We find the celebratory fact in every life. Everybody's unique. You know, let's give everybody a unique send off. Everybody's got amazing stories, but so often they get lost. So I do encourage people, plan it long before there's a need, and then you can always change it. It can be changed as time progresses, and it is such an important thing. I am doing the funeral of a very dear friend Tuesday week, and she asked me if I would write her funeral probably 2-3 years ago now, and her daughter was saying it's so useful to have that because her daughter will add bits and put her own touch on it, but she's got mum's basic wishes there, and she planned what sort of coffin she liked, and it's all happening with the least trauma for her daughter, which is what she really wanted to happen. So the I think the important thing, so if I pick out the most, I think, important things, and then a funeral does not have to cost a fortune. We hear of people spending thousands and thousands of pounds, but the important thing is you need to know when to say yes and when to say no. But because most people don't want to talk about funerals and dying, they don't know their choices. And they go to a funeral directors who's obviously out to help them, yes, but also to spend their money. And there are so many things that people get talked into that they perhaps, if they knew about, they wouldn't even begin to think they needed. So, and I do workshops, which Catherine came to, go into this in very, very great detail, because I think it's really important. And the another thing is, our final choices have a massive impact on the planet. Cremation causes pretty much 20% of the air pollution. But nobody talks about that too far. You know, it's sort of like we don't talk about that subject matter. Cremation is a choice that many people make, but there are things we can do to make it a greener choice. And there are quite a lot of things we can do. And of course, the greenest option is woodland burial, natural burial. And there are quite a few options around here. You do not have to have a funeral service in a church or a crematorium, as you don't have to ever have it a wedding, you can have it in the garden, at home, anywhere. And that again is so much more palatable, I think, to have if you've got a beautiful garden, a beautiful home, why not, you know, have the funeral service there, and then maybe just the close family go to the crematorium or the burial, just briefly with the funeral director, and let them deal with that side of it. But again, you need to have these conversations beforehand so that the family feel okay. When Carrie and Nick's dad died recently, we hired, it was just so beautiful, the Blue Idol Quaker House. And there was no time limit there. It was just so beautiful. It was peaceful. The coffin came. And he had a yellow coffin because he always wanted a yellow car. So that was a very easy choice.
Cardboard.
And Carrie, the family all went and chose a flower from the local florist that represented their, I don't know, friendship, relationship with John. Carrie bought a great big armful of beautiful ferns and coloured leaves from the dog walk she'd done that morning. And I'll share with you, I took a sprig of yellow berberis, which gave me quite a secret little thrill, because the yellow matched the coffin beautifully. The perfume was just superb, and that, you know, was indicating our, or to, in my mind, our two children, who obviously are very special to us. And the prickly leaves, you can imagine, we were divorced, we'd been divorced for many, many years, and the prickly leaves just were in amongst it all, but that actually was a really profound moment for me. It was symbolic of our relationship, you know, it wasn't all bad. but there were some prickly bits. So I've diverged slightly, haven't I? And really, after that funeral, after John, well, to start with, everybody arrived. Con came too, didn't you, Con? And had donuts and coffee before the little ceremony, which took place in the Quaker meeting house. Nick made a screen of photographs to music, which was lovely.
And donuts were his favourite thing. Anywhere he went, he had to have a donut and a cup of tea, so that's why the donuts.
And we put some a donut and a cup of, I think it was tea or coffee, on the coffin as well. And then afterwards, the funeral director, wonderful Judith Dandy, local lady, really recommend her. We could have waved goodbye there and she would have dealt with the rest, but Nick really wanted to go to the crematorium to say goodbye, so we did do that. And then just eight of us went out for a nice meal afterwards. But it was very personal, and particularly with elderly people, it just feels, you know, it's difficult for them to get to a crematorium. They sit there and think, oh, is it my turn next? And so to have the ceremony, the service at home or in the garden or in a little local hall. We've got a lovely hall in Billingshurst at the King's Head. I have plans to be using that. Beautiful, beautiful hall. So there's lots of scope, and it sort of feels softer and warmer than going to a crematorium. But then, you know, we have that choice. And there's no rush. Crematorium, you've got a 20-minute slot, unless it's suggested that you book a double slot. But usually by the time people get to me, the minister or celebrant, there's a single slot already booked, and it's too late then to do a double slot. And it's very limiting as to what you can get into 20 minutes. And it's quite a strain on the celebrant, the minister, to actually fit everything in, especially if other people speak. So there's no time restrictions. And another lovely place is Clayton Wood, down on the South Downs. That's where a funeral's taking place in a couple of weeks. That's where I've got my grave booked. Overlooked by the Jack and Jill windmills. And just to go back to nature and have maybe a tree with berries, I call that fancy, being planted on the grave. And did you know that it is possible to be buried in your garden or on private land? It isn't too complicated. So my workshop, I tell people all about that. There are so many beautiful choices. You can have wild, in different parts of the country, you can be buried in a wildflower meadow, a woodland burial grounds, or Clayton Wood on the South Downs. There are quite a few now opening up, and that is the most environmental way of departing, because you're really going back to nature. And the important thing is, it is maintaining green and open land. It involves planting trees, which of course deal with the CO2, and it's a habitat for wildlife, wildflowers, insects, little animals. And it's a lovely, beautiful, beautiful place to go for families to go and walk and visit.
You haven't spoken about embalming, actually.
I didn't know. It's very gruesome. I'm not sure whether this is the moment.
No, but basically, unless you say you don't want it, it takes place, and environmentally it's horrendous. So you don't need to go into the details, but
that's why I think it's very important to know when to say yes and when to say no, because a lot of funeral directors, especially the big companies, will embalm a body without even saying to you, would you like this loved one's body embalmed? And they call it hygienic treatment. You say, oh yes, you know, I want them to be clean and smell nice. But in actual fact, the embalming process is, I wouldn't have anyone close to me, unless there's a very good reason for it. There are, if a body's got to be kept for a long while, well then yes, it probably might have to happen. If a body's going to lay in state, or if it's got to be flown to another country or moved to another country, it has to be. But other than that, it's a very, very intrusive procedure, and it's very, very unenvironmental. A lot of woodland burial grounds won't accept cremated remains, and they certainly won't accept embalmed bodies because of the damage it does to the earth. But unless you know to ask, is this likely to happen? It could well happen, and you get charged for it. Now, I know where I worked in Brighton, lovely Cara, she was an embalmer, but when she opened Arca, she never said, I will never, ever embalm another body. And unless there's a very good reason, the family asked, for instance, she would get an embalmer in. But we worked for all those years, and it isn't necessary in the day, generally, it isn't necessary. Now, in days when we've got refrigeration available. But the amount of pollution that causes, both to the earth and to our atmosphere, is unbelievable. But again, people don't talk about it, or don't want to talk about it, so it isn't public knowledge. But my mission is to spread the word, basically. And we just, I don't know if I can hop back here successfully, but I've just, with a group of, since the workshop I did that Catherine came to at Sedgwick Park, this has all happened. It all within a year. The last wishes, leave your legacy, and this is going to be a training program that covers the whole aspect and more of environmental. The whole focus is on environmental matters and being kind to the planet, basically. And we've got lots of really interesting information on there. And we also hold, we call it our tea room, which is rather like this, every 2 weeks, where we have a set of cards where people can click. We choose a card every week, every time we have one, and we discuss the subject on that card. And it's all about end of life matters. But so interesting to see the suggestions and the experiences people come up with, and it is absolutely fascinating, and it's really going very, very well. And this is to be launched in about 2 weeks' time, generally. So watch this space. So I'll close with that. Thank you for listening. I hope I haven't bored you to tears. And if anyone's interested in coming to our tea room, I think the information's in Carrie's, the website information's in Carrie's email. And when the COVID lockdown has completely finished, I will be running more Last Wishes workshops locally. So hopefully we can get together and I can tell you give you the full works then if you're interested. So thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and I hope it's been useful.
Thank you very much, Mum. Helen, should we stop filming?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So-